You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 3rd of March, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I've got an interesting news story today that's actually coming out of London, and it concerns the Pakistani Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. The UK's first retirement community celebrating LGBT plus people is set to open in London later in 2021 after securing a £5.7 million loan from the Mayor of London. Now, this is interesting, isn't it? Why is this specifically from the Mayor of London? It's not from any particular organisations in London, but it is specifically from the Mayor of London, who is a Muslim. He comes from Pakistan, a particularly conservative country. Why would it be that a Muslim from Pakistan would be promoting something within Britain that he certainly wouldn't be promoting in Pakistan? If LGBT plus was considered a good thing, surely you would think that he would be doing all he could to bring the wonders of LGBT plus to Pakistan. Strange, isn't it, that he's doing this in London? Of course, I would suggest that the reason why he's doing this in London is because he is acting to advance the interests of his own people. And one of the ways he can advance the interests of his own people is to weaken the host nation that his people live among. And one of the ways he could do that is by promoting diversity so that it's more multicultural in the host nation, and also by promoting LGBT plus, promoting ideas that are guaranteed to divide society, to weaken society. See, the problem with promoting homosexual ideas and promoting homosexuality as being something positive and something good, it weakens male friendships. It weakens the bonds that the host nation has amongst the men, because you worry that you can't be too friendly with somebody because they might think that you're homosexual, or you worry that somebody that you are being friendly to might think that you are homosexual. So nobody ends up having any really good friendships, strong friendships, because the fear is people might think that you're homosexual if you do that. So it weakens the friendship bonds of the host nation. And I think this is the reason why he promotes ideas such as this. Tonic Housing has used the loan to purchase 19 flats at Bank House in Vauxhall, which will be available to buy on a shared ownership basis in late spring, with the first residents expected to be moved in by mid-summer. So they're basically setting up their own exclusive community for homosexuals here. How would it be reported if white people were to say, well, we would like to set up our own exclusive community, and we would like to put our elderly in there? You know what would happen then. We would be accused of being Nazis and white supremacists and all the rest. The 1 and 2 bedroom apartments will be coupled with care, events and activities, which the Housing Association says will celebrate LGBT identities, working with established LGBT organisations and support providers. Again, imagine if you were to say, well, we would like to set up a retirement community specifically for white people, and the Housing Association will celebrate white identity. It will be all about white pride and being proud of your white ancestry. Again, we would be accused of being haters for this, and the fact that we wanted to celebrate our white identity would be equated with us hating everybody else. Yet it's perfectly okay for the LGBT community to celebrate being LGBT. And I'm not suggesting here that these people that are wanting to celebrate LGBT are in any way hating the rest of society. But why is it that when we want to celebrate being white, we are told we must hate all the other races? We simply want all races to be proud of who they are, and we question why it is that it's only whites who are not allowed to be proud of who they are and are not allowed to celebrate their identity. Tonic Housing said services will be genuinely affirming of the lives, histories, needs and desires of LGBT plus people, adding that this does not imply exclusion of those who do not identify as LGBT, but actively value those who respect and celebrate LGBT plus people. So what histories are there of LGBT plus people? There wasn't an LGBT plus community until they legalized sodomy 50 or 60 years ago. Before that, if that went on, it went on behind closed doors. It wasn't promoted. There wasn't a community. And anybody that was engaged in that was running the risk of criminal punishment. And they certainly wouldn't have been promoted as great people in history. So the only way they can come up with histories of supposed homosexuals in the past is to allege that they were homosexuals, which is an actual fact. It means smearing a lot of the great people of our past and claiming that they must be homosexual because they were good friends with other men, or they had a friend who was like a brother to them. One instance in particular of this, homosexual activists like to claim that Prince David from the Bible was homosexual because he had a very good friend who was like a brother to him. I forget the name of who it was. Jonathan, that was it. David and Jonathan. They like to say that David and Jonathan must have been homosexual because David was good friends with Jonathan. If you actually look back in our histories in the Chronicles of Britain, you'll see that it actually talks about kings being in love with one another. It's not talking about homosexual love. It's talking about brotherly bonds, brotherly friendship. And this we just do not have anymore, because homosexuality and the promotion of LGBT has weakened those bonds within our society. Labour's London Mayor Sadiq Khan said he is delighted and proud to be helping to open the facility. Again, I wonder whether he'd be delighted and proud to be opening such a facility in Pakistan. He wouldn't be, because he knows that it would weaken the Pakistan community to be doing that. He says, London is an open, diverse, inclusive city, and I'm delighted to see these long-held plans come to fruition with the help of this loan and my community-led housing hub. So he's put all his efforts into actually doing this. This is a personal thing for him, is to promote homosexuality within London. And I guess he thinks he's going to get more votes with that. But when you think homosexuals, they used to say they only made up 1% of the population. Nowadays, they say they make up about 3% of the population. So that's 1 to 3% that might be inclined to vote more for Sadiq Khan. I think it's far more likely that he is promoting this because he knows that it will weaken the community. He says, older Londoners deserve to be able to enjoy their later years in comfort and security, surrounded by a thriving, supportive community. Well, don't everybody deserve to be able to enjoy their later years within a thriving and supportive community? I think a lot of old white Londoners live in fear. They go outside their front door and they hear half a dozen different languages being spoken. They go to their local shop and they can't catch up on the local gossip because the person in the local shop doesn't really speak very much English. And if they go out on the streets at night, after dark, they run the risk of being mugged. We should be looking out for our white elderly and ensuring that they have white-only spaces. If it's going to be okay to arrange to have homosexual-only spaces, why can't we have white-only spaces? He says, I look forward to seeing this realised at Bankhouse and to support Tonic's work to establish further LGBTQ plus affirming developments in the years to come. Tonic Housing CEO Anna Keir has said the facility will be the first of many LGBT-friendly retirement communities that they plan to open in the UK. And I haven't mentioned until now the fact that they're basing their entire identity on what they do between the bedsheets. And a lot of the time it's not between the bedsheets, is it? It's out in the open in parks, scandalising families that have gone for a visit in the park, or it's carried out in gentlemen's toilets, the filthy habit of cottaging, which is how they procure other male partners. Perhaps that's what this is about. It's actually providing somewhere where they can indulge in their habits without offending the general population, but somehow I doubt that. And they want to set up more of these homosexual communities. But the thing is, with a community, you need the elderly, you need children, you need families. And of course, homosexuals can't produce their own families. They can only purchase children from others, either through surrogate mothers or through adoption, which is absolutely scandalous. Depriving a child of having both a mother and a father, just so that we can pretend that homosexual relationships are the equivalent of heterosexual relationships. They're not. I mean, if people wish to indulge in homosexual acts, and it is the homosexual act that makes one a homosexual, and it still is only the homosexual act that makes one a homosexual, if people wish to indulge in that, then that is their business. But to promote it as the equivalent of heterosexual sex means disintegrating our society and disintegrating our morals, as we see happening now with the idea that sodomy is actually the equivalent of marriage. And we see all the problems that this has caused with teaching children at school, because if you're going to say it's the equivalent of marriage, then children are going to wonder how it is that these homosexuals can produce children and what the difference is. And then you end up having to tell the children about the mechanics of the homosexual act, which is absolutely horrifying for children to hear. They know that they're not hearing something that is good, that is something that is to be celebrated, and yet they've got the grown-ups telling them this, which is bound to cause neuroses. And of course it does cause neuroses, and now we've got children on antidepressants. Anna Keir says, we are making history today, realising a long-held dream to provide a safe place for older LGBT plus people to live well in a community where they can be themselves and enjoy their later life. We applaud the Mayor of London for recognising and supporting the needs of older LGBT plus Londoners. And I think it's absolutely crazy to think that he is doing this out of some kind of love for elderly homosexuals. He is doing this because he wants to weaken London. And of course, left-wing people will say, well, why would he want to weaken London? He is a Londoner. Doesn't matter what the colour of his skin is. Doesn't matter what his ethnic heritage is. He was born in London, so his loyalty must be to London. Well, let's have a look at what happened when he was elected mayor. And this news report comes from Pakistan. And there's lots of these news reports. All you have to do is look up Pakistan celebrates Sadiq Khan as mayor of London. And this one comes from Yahoo News. The election of a Pakistani bus driver's son as the Mayor of London was greeted with celebration on Saturday in Pakistan, from where Sadiq Khan's parents emigrated to Britain in the 1960s. News of Khan's win in the British capital featured on the front pages of all major Pakistani newspapers, while also causing a stir on social media. So regardless of what the left-wing people think, the whole of Pakistan saw this as one of theirs taking over London. They said, "Congratulations at Sadiq Khan for being elected Mayor of London." And that came from Biliwal Bhutto, leader of the opposition Pakistan People's Party and the son of former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. "British Pakistanis need a role model," he added. Interesting, isn't it, that the role model that he is choosing for British Pakistanis is somebody that promotes homosexuality within the host nation. And they're not saying what a great role model he is for the Pakistanis. Is that what we should call them? If we have British Pakistanis, should we also have Pakistani Pakistanis? Elsewhere on social media, most Pakistanis appeared to greet Khan's win with pride. But some could not resist pointing out the irony of the jubilant reaction in the deeply conservative country. "Pakistani, Sadiq Khan won. Reporter, so you'd vote for a minority immigrant son of a bus driver as mayor of Karachi, would you? Pakistani, are you mad?" tweeted newspaper columnist Bina Shah. And that is the point, isn't it? That is the point. The Pakistanis would not be so crazy as to vote for an immigrant as the mayor of Karachi, because they understand that that would mean that Karachi had been taken over by this immigrant. And that's the reason why Pakistan is cheering for this. And this makes it clear that when Sadiq Khan introduces these policies, such as promoting homosexuality in London, he's doing that to weaken Britain. When he promotes Black Lives Matter in London, he's doing that to weaken Britain. That's what diversity does. Division is a weakness. A house divided against itself will not stand. And let's just have a look at how homosexuality is treated in Pakistan before we leave this news story here. Section 4 of Pakistan's Penal Code criminalises sexual intercourse outside of marriage in accordance with Sharia law principles. As non-heterosexual marriages are not legally recognised in Pakistan, all same-sex sexual intercourse is necessarily outside of marriage, and so captured by this provision. The penalty is death by stoning for married people or 100 lashes for unmarried people. So there we have it. We have Pakistan celebrating that Sadiq Khan is the mayor of London. And in Pakistan, they have a penalty of death by stoning for homosexuality or 100 lashes if you're unmarried and you're involved in homosexual acts. So there we have it. We have Pakistan that celebrates the Pakistani mayor of London, the same Pakistan that punishes homosexual acts with death by stoning. And yet this Pakistani mayor of London makes it a big cause celebre of his to promote homosexuality. Do we see the Pakistanis condemning Sadiq Khan for this? No, we don't. We see the Pakistanis celebrating Sadiq Khan. And it's not like he's only just started promoting homosexuality. I mean, the whole time he's been in the Labour Party and he's been promoting all these left-wing ideas, and the country that he comes from is a deeply conservative right-wing country. I mean, it is really white people are the only people that can't see what's going on here. The Pakistanis can see what is going on, and that's why they cheer Sadiq Khan on. It's white people that are at fault. It is white people that have a blindfold on. We have a blindfold on, and we have one hand tied behind our backs, and we've done it to ourselves. I'm not expecting Sadiq Khan to change. I'm not saying this because I expect the Pakistanis to change. I don't expect them to change, and I don't want them to change. They should be doing all they can to advance their interests. The problem lies with white people. We are not working together as a team, and we are not working to advance our own interests. I've got another example of the way that the country is being divided to get into next, and this one comes from Bristol. Bristol, England, not Bristol, United States. Bristol Council has passed a motion in favour of reparations as an act of atonement for the city's historical association with slavery. How the form of these reparations are going to come about, I don't know. Are they just going to hand out money to all the black people in Bristol, regardless of the fact that Britain never ever had any slaves upon it? You know, it was part of English law that if somebody who was a slave, who was owned by somebody, and they could manage to get to Britain the minute they set foot on the shore, they were a free man. They were no longer a slave. So that means that it's impossible to have had any black people in Britain that were slaves. They may say that they are descendants of slaves, but the only way they could be descendants of slaves that had anything to do with white people is if they moved here from America. They can't really claim to be the descendants of black slaves in Africa, can they? Because that would have meant that they were owned by black Africans, and it's black Africans that they should be going to for reparations. Why is it it's only in white countries that we're being asked to pay reparations to black people when it was black people themselves that were selling these slaves? Why isn't Bristol Council advocating in Africa for reparations? Why is it doing it here? Could this have anything to do with the fact that the mayor of Bristol is black? And just like the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, who tries to weaken his city, weaken the unity in his city, the black mayor of Bristol tries to do the same by introducing this idea of reparations. The controversial move was led by Labour councillor Cleo Lake, who said, "I believe we are here on this earth to live, grow, and to do what we can to make the world a better place for all people to enjoy." And I agree with him. That is why we are here on earth. But the way that you make the world a better place for all people to enjoy is to stand up for your own people and advocate for your own people, which is what this Cleo Lake is doing. But if white people were to be standing up and speaking for ourselves and trying to do what is best for our people, we would not be going along with these ideas of reparations. If we were doing what is best for white people, we would be offering incentives and rewards for the newcomers to go back to their ancestral homelands. We certainly wouldn't be going along with an idea like this, but it is predictable that he is going to come out with ideas like this, and also the black mayor of Bristol, because he's advocating for his people. And we have to see it as that, as whites. We have to see what is going on here. He says, "Today is a historic moment where we can go some way towards what must be done to atone and repair from the past." And of course, he's saying that as if he's a part of the people that needs to atone. He's a British citizen, so of course he's a part of the British people, and he has a right to speak for the British people and to claim that the British people somehow must atone for their past. And of course, that's okay if he wants to be like that, but why haven't we got white people speaking up for the past and saying, "Well, hang on a minute, it was black tribal chiefs that sold the black Africans, and you're standing there talking to me in clothes that we introduced you to. You're speaking in the English language that we taught you. You are writing in the English language, and we taught you how to write. You're healthy because we gave you medicine. Everything that you now know how to do with civilization, we brought you as white people. How about instead of us atoning for the past, you are grateful for the past and for all the good things which you now enjoy, which we have given you?" And that is before we even bring up the fact that we did away with slavery. The only people in the entire history of the world to eliminate slavery and to spend untold resources in sending navies around the world to actually prevent any more slavery going on, the amount of resources we had to put into stopping black Africans from selling black Africans is just incredible. And why have we not got anybody speaking up and saying this? Why have we got no advocates for white people saying this, apart from nationalists? Clio was joined by 46 other councillors in approving the motion, which aimed to address the uncomfortable truth that lighter skin did and continues to confer greater advantage. How are you going to change that? How are you going to change that? Is she saying that it's just the skin colour that does this? It's nothing to do with the average IQ and the average IQ gap being 30 points between a white Englishman and a black African in some parts of Africa? And that's the reason why there is a difference. It's because civilization was built by white people, so obviously white people are going to be most likely to benefit from it. And it's the fact that white people have the skills to build a civilization. Black people don't have the skills to build a civilization. They don't have the IQ. And I'm sure there are a lot of other factors which actually come into it, because of course Chinese people have a high IQ, but they were never able to advance to such a degree of civilization as white people have been able to. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the races are different, and why that should be uncomfortable for anyone, I don't know. We're not uncomfortable about the fact that cats and dogs are different. If you want to look at subspecies within one, you could say, well, are we uncomfortable with the fact that there are different types of whale? Are we uncomfortable with the fact that there are different types of bear, and some bears are able to live in the polar regions better than other bears who live in the temperate woods? Why is it uncomfortable that we see that different races have different life outcomes? And why is it that we try to reduce this to just being about something as petty as skin colour? White people go brown in the sunshine. What is the difference? It's got nothing to do with skin colour. It's all to do with quality. It's to do with the quality of a person, not the quantity. Reparations are necessary, the councillors argue, for achieving social justice, because racism and racial hierarchy continue to fuel division. Affirmative action needs to be taken to support the descendants of enslaved Africans. Well, what about the enslaved whites? And what about the black Africans that enslaved these Africans? Why do you need affirmative action to be taken to support the descendants of people that were enslaved? And why is it that we see slavery as such a bad thing? It really was just a means of employing people. They weren't forced to work, starved to death. If they'd stayed in Africa, they would have had to do some form of work, and they would have been doing it for black Africans. The fact is, they were doing work for white farmers in America. All they were doing is picking fruit. All they were doing was working on a farm for a certain amount of hours a day in exchange for a roof over their head, clothing, medical care, food, warmth. I mean, they really had hit the jackpot when they were bought by white people instead of being bought by black Africans, who would very often use them for human sacrifices or eat them. The few councillors against the stance believe it exacerbates division. The motion promotes a binary view of the world when the reality is much more complicated, added Conservative councillor Steve Smith, one of just 12 who opposed it. And this is the point that I'm trying to make throughout this podcast. It exacerbates division. And that's how it benefits the people that are doing it, the people group that are doing it. Of course, this instance here also benefits them in that they will get more affirmative action, that they will get these reparations, they'll actually get these financial reparations, but it also serves to divide the host society. It weakens the host society, the same as the first news story, the promotion of homosexuality. That weakens the host society. That's the primary reason for this. It weakens whites. to the benefit of the black group. And the first story there, that weakens whites as well. And it weakens whites not just to the benefit of the black group, but for all the groups which aren't actually white, all the groups which aren't actually part of the host nation. We don't see these calls for reparations in Africa. We don't see the calls for the promotion of homosexuality in Pakistan. And yet the mayor of London is a Pakistani. You would think he has a strong ethnic heritage. He would have a real interest in trying to bring homosexuality to Pakistan. But he doesn't. And you would think that the black members of Bristol Council, they would have a real interest in talking about reparations in Africa. How about you get some reparations from those black African chiefs for all those poor, starving Africans that are still over there? Of course they won't, because the whole point of it is to weaken whites. The government is fighting back with rules to make it near impossible for local authorities to remove treasured statues and monuments. However, as yesterday's motion proves, there are still plenty of other avenues for crazed campaigners to follow. Among the plans being put together by Bristol Council are wealth creation strategies, which will call upon institutions that have benefited from slavery to work towards atonement and reparations, as well as recognition of a crime against humanity. It's a crime against humanity to expect Africans to work for their keep. A crime against humanity to give them a job on a farm. It's so ridiculous when you actually break this down into what it actually is. And to find the truth out about slavery, all you have to do is look at the primary source documents. But of course, people don't do that. People look to Hollywood to get their information about this. And who is vastly overrepresented in Hollywood? Yes, again, it's another one of these minority groups. So, of course, they're going to use Hollywood to advance their interests. That's what this is all about. It's about different competing extended kinship groups, and we're all in competition together. And whites are the only group that fail to recognize that. Everybody else instinctively works to promote the cause of their group. But we, as whites, we seem to instinctively go towards promoting the cause of these other groups instead of our own. And that is the fundamental point that really needs to change. Once that changes, we'll be able to put things right. But until we actually have that fundamental change where white people start remembering that they are actually a part of a group and working together as a group, we will continue to lose in this competition. And until we learn to think of ourselves as a group again, and we start working to further the cause of our group, it doesn't matter what political party we get in or what nationalist organisations we have. The fundamental part of this is that we need to start thinking of ourselves as part of an extended family. And the way to do that is through community building. It's through positive ethnocentrism. That is the winning strategy. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.